Hey, and welcome to The Living Stone, a digital ministry from Greystone Baptist Church in Raleigh, North Carolina. This Sunday, we were joined by guest preacher Paula Clayton Dempsey. Paula's sermon was titled, Plenty Good Room. Here's Kathy Deming with our scripture reading.
Reading from Luke 14, verses 7 through 15. When he noticed how the guests chose the place of honor, he told them a parable. When you're invited by someone to a wedding banquet, do not sit down at the place of honor in case someone more distinguished than you has been invited by your host. And the host who invited both of you may come and say to you, give this person your place. And then in disgrace, you would start to take the lowest place. But when you're invited to go and sit down at the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he may say to you, friend, move up higher. Then you will be honored in the presence of all who sit at the table with you. For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. He said also to the one who had invited him, when you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends, or your brothers, or your relatives, or rich neighbors, in case they may invite you in return, and you will be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind, and you will be blessed because they cannot repay you, for you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. One of the dinner guests, on hearing this, said to him, blessed is anyone who will eat bread in the kingdom of God. The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. I am glad to be here. Glad to be worshiping with you, Chrissy, and Christian friends I've had for so long in ministry. And with Greystone Baptist Church. You know, I spent 8 years living in Raleigh at Meredith College, and I lived in Raleigh when I was a student at Southeastern Seminary. And this is my first time in your sanctuary that I can recall. And it is indeed an honor to be your pulpit guest today at this special time in the life of the world and the life of the church. When the church is having to pivot and change in ways we never imagined, where there's so many challenges, so much pain, and in Christian's hymn that we sang, he talked about how all of us have a little brokenness about us. I mean, that's just true. We're living in a world where there's a lot of brokenness. So what a gift it is to be invited to be a part of this family of faith, to share a little bit of our lives together, to encourage one another in how we tend each other's woundedness. You know, as I was preparing to come be with you, I just scanned your website a little bit, and I was struck by the words in your covenant, where you say you commit to care for each other and sustain each other through prayers and deeds of kindness. If there's anything our world needs now is the embodiment of kindness. Kindness is so missing. Just turn on the evening news. Set foot in the Capitol. We need more kindness. So I want to thank you for allowing me just to spend a few moments with you. And if you want to learn more about the work I've done for 12 years now, you can stay afterwards in Sunday school and I'll tell you all about the Alliance of Baptists. But today, it's about how we spread kindness, how we share kindness with one another. And I am really grateful that you've invited me to do this with you. And I thank Christian for including in worship this song that is stuck in my ear. Plenty good room, plenty good room. I mean, some of y'all started singing it when he sang it a few moments ago. Plenty good room in my Father's kingdom. Plenty good room, plenty good room. Just choose your seat and sit down.
It's actually become an earworm for me. Y'all know that term, earworm?
Yeah. You know, one really, if you're as old as me, you remember an earworm of the Oscar Mayer song? Oh, now that one's stuck. I'm going to be stuck in your brain. But this song, when I first learned about it, I read the refrain in Bishop Michael Curry's book, The Way of Love. And if you haven't read his book or aren't familiar with that, I commend it to you. He had the refrain in there, and so I went and looked it up online and found this young choir singing it. So it just has become a part of my driving down the road. I'm singing Plenty Good Room. Walking the dog, I'm singing Plenty Good Room. And in the choir, I'm singing Plenty Good Room. And it then sent me to the text to find, where are the stories where having plenty good room are demonstrated in the stories that Jesus told, in the life that Jesus lived. And these two stories in the book of Luke came to me. Stories about tables, guests at tables, and table settings. One of a large banquet, kind of like a wedding banquet, and another like a table you'd have in your dining room, a table you would set for a small group that's gathered. The first story reminds me of the family get-togethers on the farm that where I grew up. So my home is just about 50 miles from here north of Durham in a little community called Hurdle Mills. I grew up on a tobacco farm. Any people in this room who have that kind of history that share that with me? Tobacco farm history? I see a hand or two. Oh, some more are admitting that. Okay. All right. So we grew up working tobacco as a family, and I learned a lot about hard work. We shared work in the community. There were a lot of values I learned in that family, in that community growing up in the 60s. So when we would have get-togethers with our family, usually on Sunday after church, there was the big table where important people sat. There was the children's table where I remember sitting most of the time. And then I eventually graduated to sitting at the table with the women who had prepared the meal. So if we'd had a guest for that family get-together on a given Sunday, maybe the visiting preacher, he would sit with the men at the dining room table. And so, you know, that's what I remember it being like. And if I had attempted to sit at the table where the men and the visiting preacher sat, I would have been told where to move. I mean, they would have told me which table was mine to sit at. So that's what that first story reminds me of. Is those get-togethers, and there were a lot of folks at those get-togethers, by the way. There were 14 children in my father's family and 10 siblings in my mother's family, so there were a lot of people when we'd have those get-togethers. But we all knew where we were supposed to sit. Now, the second story, this much smaller dinner table, reminds me of the dinners on the farm. And in the summertime, when we're harvesting tobacco, my dad would often employ other young men in the community to help us to get our work done. We did a lot of the work ourselves, but we always needed help for the harvest time because it was a sun up to sundown job bringing in the tobacco. And everyone who came to work with us any given day to harvest tobacco, we'd make sure they got fed a good dinner in the middle of the day. Because you need that extra food to help you to accomplish your work during the rest of the day. So, and being the only girl in the family with three brothers, it was my job to help my mother get the meal on the table. So whatever she needed, that's what I would do, peeling potatoes, peeling onions, you know, whatever the job was. But often the job was setting the table. Setting the table would get assigned to me. Often. And so that particular time in the 60s, here's how the table would be set on the farm. If we had any black young men helping us that day, they would usually sit at a different table than the family. That was how the table was set at that time. Well, I was bothered by how the table was set. So, you know, and I was an unruly teenager sometimes.
You know, I had a mind of my own. And so I set the table the way I thought it should be set. I set the table so that all of us sat together. Because, see, we had two different tables. One was pretty big, and one was in the kitchen. And there was room, plenty of room, at the bigger table on the porch for us all to eat together. So I set the table differently that day. And after doing that, we never set the table the previous way again. Now, I can't tell you that racial bias ended in my home that day. I can't tell you that at all. But what I can tell you is that something changed in that system of our family, and it was something changed because of an act of kindness that a teenage girl did. One thing and something changed. Making room at the table for everyone has been at the core of my ministry these 42 years. Yeah, it was 42 years ago when I was ordained. And it's been at the core of the work of the church ever since the beginning of the church, making room at the table for everyone. For the early followers of Jesus, it started when there were these Hellenized Jewish widows who said, "Can't you help us too? I mean, we don't have any support either." And then it expanded to include the Samaritans, you know, those folks that they were part Jew and part Gentile that the Jews wanted nothing to do with. Well, they got a seat at the table. And then all the Judeo-Christian tradition included then the Gentiles. All the Gentiles got a seat at the table and were included. And, well, those are our ancestors. So there's room enough at the table for me. And then keep forwarding in history of the church. 400 years ago, that question was raised by a group of Baptists. A group of our Baptist ancestors who risked their life and limb across the ocean and come to this world in pursuit of religious freedom. They wanted room at the table. Vision of a church that was big enough for them. And at that same time, 400 years ago, there was a group of enslaved people who wrote this song, who composed this song, "Plenty Good Room, Plenty Good Room." I mean, they sang about their vision of the church, of the world, of God's world, where there was room enough for everyone. I've been working with the Alliance of Baptists. 34 years ago, Baptists were fighting over who's got room at the table. And this Baptist body was born, making room at the table, especially for women. I understand that's part of your beginning as a church, declaring and making room at the table for women in ministry and all aspects of the life and ministry of the church. And then the Alliance moved on, and we embraced the LGBTQ community, making room at the table for those friends and family members who needed a place at God's table. So we're just keep pushing. I mean, we're called as the people of God to keep pushing and adding more leaves to the table and making more room at the table for everyone. That is our calling as followers of Jesus. You know, there's a reference in the book of Acts in chapter 17 to the church at Thessalonica. And what they say about the church there is that some believers were being dragged before the city authorities, and they were shouting, "These people who have been turning the world upside down have come here also." That's what they said about the followers of Jesus in Thessalonica, that they were turning the world upside down. Is that what we're called to do? To turn the world upside down? I don't know many churches who want to do that. We try to kind of maintain status quo often. Often that's what the church does. But yet, if we are followers of Jesus, perhaps we're called to stir it up a little bit,
to turn the world upside down, maybe to even reset a few tables so that they're more equitable and just and loving and kind. That's what I'm suggesting to you this morning. I'm just even kind of challenging, more than suggesting, I guess, that our job is to create a guest list that would be God's guest list. If we're drawing our banquet's table, who would God want us to have at the table? Would God say, oh, no, those folks don't belong here? Of course not. We're doing God's table with God's guest list. Perhaps until all God's children have a seat at the table. Some folks are being denied seats at the table, aren't they? Aren't they? Just think about it. Aren't people being denied seats at the table? The same people who composed this theological vision of room have been denied seats at the table so much in our world, in a world where we proclaim there's plenty good room. And so that vision, that counter-narrative to the dominant one, is challenging the world today. So, you know, the dominant narrative is, well, if I make room at the table for this person, then there won't be room for me. Well, that ain't the case. Not at God's table. Or if we make sure there's enough food for everyone, there won't be enough food for me. No, it's not a zero-sum game. God's table is plenty big. There's room for everyone. There's enough for everyone, especially if we all take and use just what we need. There's plenty to go around. Plenty good room. You see, every day, I believe every day in my life, I'm setting the table. You're setting the table. Every day, we have opportunities to set the table. And every day, we are God's partners in setting the table. God's partners doing acts of kindness, bringing about justice and healing in our world. Actually, Jim Forbes, who is the pastor at Riverside Church in New York City, he and I have become buddies. He actually lives here in Raleigh. And maybe you should invite him out. Chrissy, I got his phone number. If you want to invite him out, and you can say, Paula said, if I ask you, you'll come preach at Greystone. And he would. He would. He said, he tells me, Paula, we're part of God's dream team. That's who we are. We're all part of God's dream team. God's dream team to end racial inequity once and for all. God has tapped us to be on that team. God needs all of us to do our part on that team, to end the destructive power that we hold over others, that dehumanizes them, that strips people of human dignity and safety, power that withholds a living wage from those who harvest our food. Power that believes that natural resources are mine to extract and use for profit. Power that says that white bodies are more deserving than brown or black bodies. There's so much abusive power that needs to be dismantled in our world, and you're really close to where all of that happens right here in Raleigh. Just down the road. Redistricting, it's in our news every day, isn't it? Well, some of us call it gerrymandering, but you know what I call it? Table setting. It's table setting. You and I set tables. The tables are being set ever at the Capitol. Tables are being set. Some people are being denied voice. And this is the question of who does get to vote and how accessible should voting be? It's table setting. The rights of transgender persons and their families. Who has rights? Again, we're setting tables. Reproductive choice. Who gets access to that? Setting tables. Who actually gets health care at all? Who actually, only those who can pay for it? Again, we're setting tables. And schools getting adequately funded? Table setting. Clean water, who gets that? Table setting. It's just the simple story of we get to set the table and we get to invite who comes. A living wage,
in your dreams. We are called to make our world more kind and just. Not just to be kind to each other, who make up the church, but to be kind to the broader world. And you know, I realize I've had a lot of opportunities to set the table in my life, beginning with growing up on that tobacco farm in Hurdle Mills, going through my time as a student here and at the seminary, my time as a pastor and as a college chaplain, a hospice chaplain, and as a director of a nonprofit. And when I look back on these 42 years of my ministry, sometimes I really wonder if I have stewarded what God has given me faithfully enough to deserve a seat at God's table. Really, when we reflect back, have we been the kind of stewards of all the opportunity we've been given? Would God really say, "Well done, my good and faithful servant"? And I'm convinced that it's not only time for me to, others who have the power to set the table, to relinquish that power so that others can do it. And people could say, "Paula, you're getting ready to retire now. You can say that." But I think it's really time for those who've been told where to sit for so long to be the ones setting the table, to be the ones making those decisions. That's a commitment we've made in the Alliance, and it's a hard commitment. It's a significant commitment. It's systemic change. It's turning the world upside down change. And isn't that what this parable about who sits where at the table is about? When you go in, sit at the lowest seat? It's about turning the world upside down. Who has the power? Changing. Who has the power? It's not power over, it's power with. It's sharing power. It's giving up power so others have power, which is what we're called to do as Christians. Because it's God's table. We're all God's partners. God's partners in bringing about healing and hope in this world. God has tapped us to be on his dream team. Plenty good room, plenty good room. Plenty good room in my Father's kingdom. Plenty good room, plenty good room. Just choose your seat and sit down. And you know, when we sing that song, you know who we're singing it with? We're singing it not only with those voices who fought for 400 years for a place at the table. When we sing it in harmony with all those we stand shoulder to shoulder with who are working to create those kind of places of hope and healing right now in our communities, in our state, in our nation, in our world. There are other churches standing right alongside you. As Greystone Baptist Church, you take one step forward to make this world a little kinder. We're right there beside you, with you, doing it together. You're not alone. And when we sing it, we're singing it on behalf of all of those who are going to come before us. All of those who are our unborn progeny. Because we are tenaciously pursuing a kinder and just world for our children and for our grandchildren. That's why we do this. We're doing these deeds of kindness because God's called us to, and because we want to create a world for our progeny that's better than the one we were born into. And you know who else is with us as we sing that song every day, hum it while we walk around? It's God. God's with us. The Spirit of God is with us right here on the front lines of hope, breathing in us the power and the strength to carry on as we make room at the table for everyone. And if you go back and look in that passage in Luke, the very last verse, did you catch it? It said, blessed. If you read the Beatitudes, sometimes there are translations that translate that word happy. Happy, it says, are those who will feast in God's kingdom. You know, when there's room at the table for all, and when all come together at the table, man, there's a lot of joy. There's a lot of fun. And so I may say this is hard work we've got to do, but I really believe, my friends, that when we do that work and we gather as God's children, that there is so much joy that we've missed out on because we've not set the table broadly enough. We've not worked hard enough to welcome everyone. When we do, I believe there's joy. There's joy to be had, joy we've missed out on. So, my friends, hear that refrain. Sing it with me. Make it be an earworm in your ear so that everyone will have a seat at the table.